and Antiochus had been, I had two senses to help me. The thing was sniffing the floor. I could hear its nose scraping the stone as it came closer. I sensed its frost, felt its cold breath on my face as it opened its mouth. I dove out of the way, feeling it brush past me as I rolled on the floor and came to my feet. A draught brushed against my back. That must be the tunnel to the beast's lair. I didn't want to back myself in there. I moved away from it, my hands out. Sniffing. Cold breath. I threw myself to the right as a breeze from the leaping creature brushed past, my hands slapping the wall. Cold to my left. I moved along the wall to the right, sliding my hands along the stone. I paused, my senses on alert, and realized the sniffing had stopped. It was silent. The beast couldn't be smart enough to realize I could hear it. Could it? A rush of cold built in front of me. I threw myself to the side, but not fast enough. A blade-sharp claw sliced my leg, cleaving a gash into my calf. I sucked in a breath and kept scuttling to the right. The beast sniffed and roared, clearly excited by the smell of my blood. I sensed it was a few feet away to my right, coming closer. I moved quietly, slowly, but it moved with me. I raged silently against the blood dripping from my calf. The beast could smell me now, no matter where I moved. Arcus had told me to be aware of my surroundings, to use them to my advantage. Where were those blasted chains? Maybe I could use them as a weapon, catch the beast in the eye. I moved along the wall, stopping when I came to the draughty tunnel. If I crossed that point when the creature came at me, I might be driven back into that hopeless space. I hovered, unsure what to do. The cold came at me unbelievably fast. I had no time to do anything but curl into a ball as its teeth grazed my back and arms. Without thinking, I pulled my arms free and threw fire behind me from my open palms and into the creature's mouth. Something sizzled and popped, liquid exploding around me like a burst bubble. Bones snapped and the body collapsed on me in a shocking flare of cold. I stayed still for a minute, dazed by the suddenness of the attack and the strength of my own inadvertent response. When my head cleared, I struggled out from the dripping carcass, gasping as the freezing liquid soaked through my clothes and slid down my back. "Get me out of here, you idiot guards!" I shouted, relief making me light-headed and a little giddy. "I killed your foul beast!" The board scraped back, letting in a sliver of light.
"You're still alive, toothpick?" asked one of the guards, his voice high with disbelief.
"What does it look like?" I said shakily. I motioned to the body, squinting as the light hit my eyes. The sight was revolting, a steaming pile of burned and smoking flesh. But it was a welcome sight.
"Looks like a melon exploded in there," he said gleefully, pointing to the dark blue blood dripping from the walls.
"By far she did it," said the other guard. "You did it, Firefilth. I'll give you that. But the king won't be happy that you killed his pet."
I panted, looking up at him for a few seconds. I'd have been less happy if I were in that stomach right now. A hint of a smile lifted the guard's lip. Elation and shock numbed my fingers and toes. I'd done it. I had beaten incredible odds and defeated the beast. Despite my bravado for the guard's benefit, I couldn't quite believe it. For several moments, I felt invincible. A shadow shifted in the ice on the far wall, moving like black smoke. It had a vaguely human shape. A head with horns and two pointed shoulders. Wisps of something like hands floated at its side. A chill, far colder than ice, rushed through my veins. Then it slipped away, faster than my eye could follow. The captain's face came into view above. His voice rang out, ordering his guards back to work. He took a long look at me through the bars. I wiped my hands on the stone. This thing stinks almost as bad as your soldiers. His eyes narrowed.
Nothing stinks worse than a fireblood.
He dusted off his hands before turning away, as if speaking to me had sullied him. Alone again, I slid until my head met the floor, huddled into myself, and closed my eyes. I was so cold. I searched my memories and found one that made my heart clench. The look in Arcus's eyes just before he kissed me. His cold lips warming under mine. His ice-chip eyes shining as he looked at me between kisses, like I was something precious and rare and beautiful. Warmth flickered in my chest. I clutched the feeling to me even as I was hauled up and led to a cell in the King's Keep. Chapter 19. The cell in the keep wasn't so different from the one in Black Creek Prison. Same stone floors, a bed of straw in the corner, a small window. An old man in stained, stinking robes came in and bandaged my leg. His hands were rough, and he used no healing herbs. So different from Brother Gamut with his gentle touch and miraculous tea. I closed my eyes and asked Sue to protect those dear to me. Arcus, Brother Thistle, Brother Gamut, Sister Pastel, and every monk whose name I could remember. Listing them again and again until I fell asleep. In the morning, I was given a basin for washing, then dressed in sturdy clothes, a brown tunic and leggings. From there, I was taken by guards and presented to the king. As I entered the throne room, something again snatched my heat in an invisible fist and held on tight. I trembled with the effort of keeping myself under control and my face blank. The king was resplendent in robes of deep blue with gold trim. The sapphire ring glinted on his hand, echoing the colour of his eyes, which had seemed darker than the day before. Bright morning sunlight poured through the window behind him. He lounged in the throne with an air of ease. As I halted, a spark lit his eyes. A little glint of anticipation that made him seem even younger somehow. If it had been anyone else, I would have thought him attractive. The throne looked clear today. No shadows moved in its depths. The same bearded man and young woman stood to the king's right. As my eyes slid over the golden-haired girl, who wore a long-sleeved turquoise gown, I judged her to be roughly my age or a little older. She returned my look, and her cheek dimpled as if she was holding in a smile. Not mocking, but warm, almost friendly. I blinked in surprise and looked away.
"You killed my beast," said the king, his voice echoing off the icicles hanging from the ceiling. Seven men were killed, and seven more maimed to get that creature here from Mount Sarkasa. And now you've destroyed it.
He seemed to wait for a response. I worked hard to keep the hatred out of my voice. It would do no good to get myself executed for insolence. That was the task you gave me, Your Majesty.
Nevertheless, you've taken away a source of pleasure. A favourite in my arena. I wonder what compensation you can offer for that loss.
Although the words were accusing, there was an almost playful quality to his tone. I blinked, trying to adjust to his change in demeanour from the day before. You find pleasure in watching your champions killed.
I enjoy watching two powerful creatures fight. And so do my people. Isn't that right, Lord Eustathius?
The bearded man agreed, stepping forward, his chin taking on an arrogant tilt.
Just so, Your Majesty. It's always a curious thing to see who wins. The champion may be ferocious or disciplined, ruthless or principled, but they all die in the end. It provides a critical lesson. There is no security but in power. Power always wins.
The king nodded almost reflexively, as if he were used to agreeing with this courtier. It reminded me that the king was much younger than he seemed with his cold, cruel eyes.
Power matters, the king agreed. All other qualities are merely decoration.
So, in their eyes, people like my mother, who were gentle and spent their lives healing others, didn't matter at all. Heat bubbled up in my chest, but the throne whisked it away so quickly it made me ache. I struggled not to put a hand to my chest.
Well, I said, by your measure I'm worthy because I defeated your beast. I was more powerful and should have a chance to win again.
He regarded me for long seconds, his eyes slightly narrowed.
Yesterday, I was certain you were weak.
Another pause.
I don't like being wrong.
No one likes being wrong, I replied, forgetting to hide the scorn that burned in my throat.
Something glittered in his eyes. Primitive fear tightened my spine and sharpened my senses. But I held the king's gaze. The room seemed to narrow until it contained only the two of us.
You speak with reckless freedom, Firling, he said in a low voice. And yet I could kill you with very little effort.
At his words, the shadows in the throne sprang to life, swirling up behind the king in a thick, smoky cloud. He suddenly looked older, harder. His eyes darkened.
I had nothing to bargain with, no leverage against the king. I needed to show him I had value to him, and the only thing he valued was strength.
Yes, I said, you could, but then you would never know how powerful I am. A smile lit the young woman's face. The bearded man next to the king took a step forward.
This will not be like facing a witless beast. His Majesty's champions have fought their way to the arena and will stop at nothing to kill you.
You can't win against my champions,
the king agreed. His tone was dismissive, his conviction so strong as if the matter was already decided.
I changed tack, attempting a tone of brave unconcern.
If you kill me now, you'll miss the pleasure of watching me lose in your arena. My death might be the most spectacular you've ever seen. Surely you can't resist the prospect of watching my blood spilled for your entertainment.
Something dark flashed over his face. His gaze swept over me in the pulsing silence.
If I wanted to destroy the throne, I had to live. To live, I had to win. And to win, he had to give me a chance to fight. I waited, barely breathing.
The young woman with wheat gold hair gave a light laugh, breaking the thick tension.
She argues well, Your Majesty. There's nothing worse than a quick, boring death in the arena. She would give your champion a good sport, I'm sure.
The king relaxed visibly, his eyes glittering blue with mirth and making him look younger again. He addressed the guard.
Put her in the room reserved for a challenger.
I clenched my muscles to hide my shaking relief, though I knew I would have to face highly trained and merciless enemies. No matter how much I had trained at the Abbey, I wasn't prepared to go up against that level of skill.
And Firling, the king added with a glint of steel in his eye,
I will hold you to your promise of a spectacular death. Don't succumb too quickly. The sport is in watching the struggle.
I curtsied low. "I'll do my best to die slowly to please your majesty." As the guards turned and took me from the room, his dark laughter followed me. The guard led me to a windowless room with a simple wooden bed and a washstand. So another prison, albeit a more comfortable one. When the door shut behind me, I turned and knocked on it experimentally. It was thick, but it was made of wood. I could burn my way through. Then again, even if I managed to escape and somehow made it past the guards, my goal was still to destroy the throne. And I had no idea how.
I lay on the straw-stuffed mattress and stared at the stone ceiling, trying to recall everything Brother Thistle had told me about the throne.
But I couldn't remember anything about it stealing my power and how to overcome that. Maybe he hadn't known. The door swung open and two guards stepped in. One put a tray of food on the floor, then they swung out. On the tray, a large wooden bowl held a thick stew with a hunk of bread on the edge. I rushed over and took a bite, closing my eyes in pleasure to find it piping hot. I was back on the straw-stuffed mattress when the door opened again. I slid off the bed and found my feet, my limbs moving automatically into a pose of readiness, knees bent, fists raised to defend myself. A woman stepped in, her full, deep plum satin skirt swishing around the door before she closed it behind her. Her eyes widened as she took in my stance, her wheat gold eyebrows lifting.
"Ready to fight, I see," she said in her elegant voice.
"Good.
But save your strength for the arena. You'll need it."
It was the young woman from the throne room, the one who had helped persuade the king to let me fight. Forcing the muscles to relax, I lowered my fists.
"Who are you?"
Her gaze swept the room.
"A little rustic, these quarters.
If you win enough matches, they might find a nicer room for you. That's some incentive. Also, you'll be alive. That's reason enough to come out swinging."
"I thought you wanted me to die a spectacular death."
"That is what I said." She paused, assessing me.
"My name is Morella.
My father, Lord Eustathius, is the other man who spoke today, the king's most trusted adviser, serving three kings in succession. You'll find I'm a valuable ally." The arrogant old man who had droned on about power being the only thing that mattered. I couldn't see how I, in my current position of powerlessness, could matter to him or to his daughter.
"And what did I do to earn your..."
I hesitated, not sure how to describe what this young woman offered.
"Friendship?" she supplied. "It's simple. Stay alive. Win your matches. Be faster and stronger than your opponents."
I raised my arms. I'm hardly going to be the strongest.
"Not your muscles, perhaps, but your fire. Use it to its fullest. Be ruthless."
I didn't expect anyone here to encourage me to be ruthless with my fire, especially against one of your own.
"That's the only reason you're still alive," she said, "to provide sport by trying to kill one of the king's champions. If you lie down and welcome death, I've troubled myself for nothing."
"How have you troubled yourself?"
"I've risked the king's displeasure by suggesting he let someone else kill you, for a start."
"Was that really such a risk?"
"The king is volatile and highly unpredictable. He isn't in control of himself. He yields to the whispers of others, who urge him to fill his appetites for bloodlust and cruelty. Say the wrong thing, and you may find yourself in the keep, or in the arena, or killed at his own hand. So yes, Ruby, it was a great risk."
I startled a little at the sound of my name. She could have called me Fireling, as the king had, or Firefilth, as the captain so enjoyed doing,
but instead she chose to give me the honour of my name.
"You dare say such things about the king?" I asked, barely above a whisper. Her brows rose.
"Are you going to tell anyone?"
I shook my head. Her lips curved at the edges. "Of course not. You're intelligent. And we both want the same thing. For you to live. Why do you care? What does a fireblood mean to you?
We have more in common than you think. I want to be, if not a friend precisely, then at least an ally.
If you can't accept me as that, perhaps think of me as an enemy who shares a common goal with you. And that goal is..." She spread her hands and smiled. "For now, your goal is simple. Stay alive. That will be difficult enough. And you want nothing else from me." She paused thoughtfully. "A few answers, perhaps. How old are you?"
17.
Her eyes lit with triumph.
"Brother Thistle must have been ecstatic to find you."
I felt the blood drain from my face. "You know him?"
"Of course. He used to serve here in the castle before he was sent to the abbey at Mount Una. And speaking of the abbey, who is the mysterious young man who lived there with you? The one who always wears a hood?"
I barely stopped myself from asking how she knew about Arcas. Then I remembered that he had grown up here, in the king's court. Morella must have known him. How tempting to ask her questions about him, what he was like as a child, what had happened to him. But I couldn't risk revealing anything to this stranger. "All the monks wear hoods at times," I said.
"Not a monk. A handsome young man who bears scars. A frostblood with a gift unequalled by anyone but the king. Does that sound familiar?"
I shook my head, my pulse raging in my ears. "No." Her lips curved again.
"Very well. Trust is built slowly. I can be patient."
She went to the door and knocked. A guard opened it immediately.
"Remember, Ruby," she said over her satin-covered shoulder. "Don't hold back tomorrow, and you have every chance to win."
She swept out, as graceful as a young doe, leaving the scent of some exotic flower in her wake. A thousand questions crashed through my thoughts, like waves breaking over each other in a gale. What did Morella and her father want? How did she know about Arcas and Brother Thistle? What was her intention toward the king? She was clearly full of plans, and saw me as a vehicle for their execution. What would she ask in return for keeping me from death in the throne room?
What help would she yet give?
I threw myself back on the bed. I had one day to rest. Tomorrow I would fight. It didn't matter that Morella intended to help me outside the arena. Inside its walls, I would stand alone. I couldn't help but remember what Brother Thistle had said when I'd asked him and Arcas if Firebloods were ever champions.
"We have never heard of a Fireblood coming out alive."
Chapter 20.
The next morning, a serving woman entered carrying a bundle of clothes. She wore a simple brown dress and a matching kerchief over her brown hair, which was plaited and hung down her back.
She was several years older than I, with a slim build and delicate features, a heart-shaped face and large, frightened eyes.
"I'm to help you dress," she said, her voice quavering slightly.
"What's your name?" I asked, clasping my hands together to hide their shaking. I had slept badly.
Dorina,
she replied, her eyes flicking up to meet mine before returning to the worn wooden floorboards. serve the champions. I sighed. Are you afraid of all Firebloods, or just me? Her round eyes grew even bigger.
I'm sorry, milady. I don't mean to offend.
You don't offend me, I replied.
And I've never been called my lady in my life. Call me Ruby.
She shook her head.
I couldn't, milady.
Her hands trembled as she laid a tunic and leather armour on the bed. It was strange to realise that while I was terrified of what would happen in the arena, a servant was afraid of me. No doubt she'd heard stories about Firebloods being merciless killers or some such thing. I kept up a constant chatter, partly to put her at ease, and partly because her nervousness made my own worse. I talked about my village, and how strange it was to be in such a grand place when I'd grown up in a thatch-roofed hut, and how I'd never worn armour and would have no idea how to put it on without her help. Anything to make me seem more innocuous. She was silent, but her hands no longer shook as she held out the blood-red tunic. She was very careful not to touch me. As I adjusted the tunic, I decided I was tired of my own voice and asked her a question. "You said you served the champions, Dorina." She nodded. "Is there anything you can tell me that might help in the arena? Anything at all?" She picked up a leather breastplate and held it in her hands for a few moments before speaking.
"You have a better chance if you win the crowd," she said in her quiet voice.
She lifted the breastplate and I put my arms through. I felt a little dizzy at the hard feel of it against my chest. Wearing armour made the impending fight seem much more real. The thought that it was to protect me from blows or blades. Has the crowd ever been won over by a Fireblood? I winced as she closed the straps at my back.
Ow, bit too tight.
She loosened the straps and then stood in front of me, her rosebud lips pursed as she examined me.
I've never heard of any Fireblood who was loved by the crowd. Perhaps you will be the first.
It didn't seem likely. The Frostbloods had come to watch me die, in payment for all the parents and children they had lost in conflicts with my people before we were wiped clean from the kingdom. My fear and anger must have shown in my face, because Dorina stepped back.
"How do you know so much?" I asked with a forced smile. "I've served the champions for 2 years. I hear them talk."
"And what else have you heard that might be of use to me? Do you have any tips?" She blinked in surprise and gnawed her lip before answering.
"It's difficult when I don't know who you'll be facing. I suppose all I can offer is that everyone has a weakness. Try to pay attention. Many of the champions have injuries, some part of their body that they protect, something they favour. If you spot their weakness, focus all your attacks on that spot, and, well, you're small. Keep your distance. If they get hold of you, you don't stand a chance."
If I hadn't been so nervous, I would have laughed.
"At least you're honest." "Honest to a fault, I'm told. Perhaps I shouldn't have said anything." "No, I'm grateful for your advice."
She held up a piece of soft calf leather, dyed black.
"Here's your mask."
It had openings for eyes, nose, and mouth.
It reminded me of the mask Arcus wore during training.
Thinking of him at all was painful, but remembering the way I had burned his hood and mask and the way he'd cried out in shock was terrible. My throat closed up, and I blinked hard. Instead, I concentrated on what he had said to me, that I was the most dangerous person he had ever known. My only chance at survival depended on my ability to be deadly. When Dorina put on my mask, it covered everything but my eyes, a small triangle under my nose and my mouth. I hated it instantly. It choked me, The idea that I was some faceless body sent to die for the king's entertainment. I whipped it off and threw it to the floor. "Sorry," I said to Dorina, her wide-eyed look making me embarrassed by my sudden rage. "I can't breathe in that."
"It's either wear a mask or a helm," she said, twisting her hands together. "You must have your face covered. It's tradition that opponents meet on even ground, noblemen and peasants alike. They're only unmasked once they're dead."
A cheerful thought.
"Well then, find me a mask that allows me to breathe, because I'm not wearing that, and a helm would be too heavy."
She nodded.
"I will find you something."
In a short while, she returned with a mask that covered my eyes. It was overly ornate, decorated with red feathers and seed pearls. When I asked her where she'd found it, she blushed a deep shade of pink.
"It's from a mistress of one of the noblemen," she said. "She had a secret to keep, and I've kept it. She owes me."
"What kind of secret?" I asked, curious what could cause such a blush.
"It's not uncommon for nobles to desire a night with the champions. I'm valued for my discretion."
I smiled, looking at her with new interest. "I do believe I like you, Dorina. You're a survivor."
"And so, I hope, are you, my lady."
As I fell into step with the guards, our booted feet made the rhythm of a battle march that echoed the susurration of blood in my ears. We passed from the castle and into the courtyard, and from there, through a tunnel that led into the great arena. The guards left me in the shade of an alcove reserved for those about to fight. My heart pounded so hard my vision blurred. I closed my eyes and took deep breaths, and then forced myself to assess my surroundings. There were fighters of all kinds, mostly men in ragged clothes and others in steel breastplates, some with gleaming sword hilts above decorated scabbards, some with no weapons at all. There were a few women, though it took me a moment to realize that, as they were broad-shouldered and armored and looked as imposing as the men. I wondered how they'd fought their way here and what their lives had been like to bring them to a place like this. I'd never seen so many people in one place. The arena was built of ice, the smooth circular walls giving the impression of a huge bowl. Tier after tier of seats grew out of the inner wall, curving around the arena on all sides. The excited noise of 1,000 people produced the hum of an immense hive, disconcertingly loud and incoherent. Balconies jutted out at intervals, holding spectators who were finely dressed, with puffs of frosty air coming from their mouths. Few clouds of frost rose from the folks packed into the regular seats. Apparently the nobility were more likely to have the gift than the common rabble. As the guards left, they pointed out a woman called Braca, a tall, broad-shouldered warrior with steely grey eyes who was moving from fighter to fighter, sharing pointers and encouragement. Icicles hung from her metal shoulder guards and clustered over her thick salt-and-pepper hair, which was arranged in a plethora of braids. I gathered she was responsible for training the Frostblood champions, though no such training had been offered to me. Not that I expected it. I clasped my hands behind my back to hide their shaking. Before I could decide what to do next, or where I should be, a rotund man with short white hair and deep indigo robes stepped into the center of the arena.
"Good people of Fors," he boomed over the buzz of the crowd.
He raised his hands and the noise quieted.
"Today, for your edification and enjoyment, we present a variety of fighters, from lowly thieves and traitors to beloved champions. We bring you marvelous beasts, exotic animals from near and far, and, as always, we bring you spectacle, entertainment, and feats of strength and daring that will leave you breathless with delight. You honour your king by cheering for his champions and cursing his enemies. May the deaths be honourable and the fights be bloody!"
My legs twitched with the urge to run. I gripped the icy wall, hoping the cold biting into my hand would focus my mind. Instead, I found myself doubled over, a hand to my stomach, breathing shallowly as I fought to stay upright. The pounding of hooves reverberated through the ground. Riders on white horses poured out of a wide opening at the other end of the arena, the morning sun glinting off polished armour. They wore bright helms and carried long spears topped with points of ice, sharp as steel. The riders were followed by champions on foot, their appearance drawing adoring cries from the crowd. Next, a procession of animals pulled against leather leashes held by muscular handlers. Snarling frost wolves, hulking white bears, a wide-faced tiger with white and blue stripes, even a massive white bull with grey horns and a yoke around its neck, held by two men on each side. The next animal was very strange. It was a large bird with crimson feathers, long legs and small wings. Its beak looked deadly sharp. It writhed and pulled against its handlers, at one point pulling its face loose from the harness and breathing a cloud of fire. I gasped with the crowd. A creature of fire, here in the City of Fours. The bird was lovely, elegant, wild. It was dangerous and impossible and unlike anything I had ever seen. It hurt my heart to see such strange beauty leashed and so out of place. The animal thrashed so hard against its handler that I feared it would snap its delicate neck. A strong urge to run out and free the animal flashed through me. But a moment later, the animals were led back through the door. Only the frost wolves were left in the arena, their mouths emitting puffs of cold mist that danced in the sunlight. A man was brought out by two guards, his hands bound. The purple-robed announcer introduced him as a traitor to the realm. The crowd answered with shouts of fury. The wolf handlers gave a command, and the wolves all sat, their bodies trembling with anticipation as their handlers took off the leashes and left the arena. The prisoner backed slowly towards the edge of the ring. From the doorway, one of the handlers shouted a command, and the wolves shot forward like arrows from a longbow, their haunches rippling as they closed in. The prisoner screamed, and I cried out with him. In a blink, he was out of sight as the wolves fell over one another to get at him. The man's cries were almost drowned out by the roar of the crowd. Almost, but not quite, I stumbled into a dark corner, my stomach heaving over and over until it was empty. The announcer introduced more animals and more traitors. More cries of pain, more growling and snapping and cheers. I was dizzy and sick, and no longer comprehending things clearly. When I looked up again, a blue and white striped tiger was lifting its bloody muzzle from a prone body as its handler threw a harness over the animal's head and led it from the arena.
"And now, good people," said the announcer,
his voice cheerful and clear,
"for a rare treat, the Firebeak will face our most seasoned champions."
Six armoured warriors entered the arena. The bird was pulled out by two handlers, who struggled to keep it controlled. The creature's eyes rolled wildly, its talons clawing the dirt as it bucked against the leash. The handlers released it and ran for the arena door as the bird shook off its harness and breathed a cloud of fire, the flame making orange light dance along the ice. The champions raised their shields and sent out streams of frost from their hands. Ice formed on the bird's feathers. It breathed another cloud of fire that faded to a puff of smoke. The men retreated. Streams of frost and fire shot back and forth. The champions kept moving back. They were clearly afraid of the fire. Hope expanded in my chest. The bird was fast. It whipped back and forth, spewing fire in thin streams aimed right at the men's faces. It seemed like the bird would never run out of energy or fire. But my hope didn't last. The champions spread out in a wide circle until the bird was in the center. As soon as it breathed its fire at one man, another came at its back, too quickly for it to block. The bird was wily and tried to avoid the frost, but there were just too many men, and eventually it was hit from all sides and fell. The warriors rushed forward as a group. A stream of fire erupted upward, as six arms were raised and six spears came down. A second cloud of fire, smaller this time, floated upward, followed by a puff of smoke. More raising and lowering of spears and more cheers from the crowd. As the champions left the arena and the dust settled, the bird was still. It looked so small, its beak too delicate, its feathers incongruously bright against the dull ground. Its long neck was bent strangely, bringing to mind another memory of a delicately bent neck surrounded by dark hair. Everything came into sharp focus. The pain and suffering of the animal cut me deeply. The firebeak was dragged from the arena, and the regular matches began, each more brutal than the last. At first, raggedly dressed men with short swords or knives faced each other. When it was too much, I closed my eyes, but I could hear the crowd cheering, the pained cries as sharp metal pierced flesh. The healer's daughter in me ached with helpless fury at the cruelty, the needless waste. By the third match, I was leaning against the wall, my legs completely numb. I finally let myself sink to the floor and realized my face was wet with tears.
"Get up, girl,"
said a harsh voice. I looked up at Bracca and her icy braids.
"You're a challenger now. There's no room for tears."
"You saw what they did to the firebeak," I said, my voice hoarse and cracking. "Is that what they planned for me?"
"You're being allowed a fair fight against one champion," she said, her eyes as steady as her voice. "You have as much chance as any other challenger. Don't let them see you crying. Face them all like a warrior, whether you are one or not."
Gathering my will, I pushed up and leaned against the wall as Bracca walked away. I wanted to tell her that I didn't care about honour, but instead I said a prayer to Sood and went back to the doorway, watching as the fighters went from raggedly dressed peasants to men in leather armour with gleaming swords. The fight that drew the most excitement was between two gifted frostbloods, with no weapons but their hands and their ice. I tried to take in the attacks and parries, hoping it might help me somehow. When one of the frostblood fighters finally slipped and fell, the other one finished him off with a shard of ice through his throat. I turned away as the champion basked in the crowd's approval.
"You're next, Fireblood," said Bracca in a low rumble. "The names have been drawn and you're to fight Gravnach, one of the most favoured champions."
From the opposite side of the arena, wooden doors opened and out walked a bear of a man. He was dressed in black leather, with bright steel armour covering one arm from shoulder to wrist. And here I saw what Dorina had meant about winning the crowd. This man knew how. He walked in wide circles, stopping to raise his arms and roar in a theatrical way. The crowd responded with wild cheers.
"At the sound of the gong, you fight," Bracca said. "Once it begins, it won't stop until you're dead. Die with honour, fireling."
It didn't escape me that she no longer claimed I had a chance. I turned to look at her in the eye, determined to show strength. You mean until Gravnach is dead? She smiled, showing a missing tooth, and gave a small dip of her chin before turning away. I moved into the shadows near the arched entrance to the arena. Every contraction and release of my heart seemed to last 100 years, the moment stretching into an eternity of agonized anticipation. The gong sounded, and the moment snapped into focus. I stepped into the arena, squinting into the glare. The shouts of adulation turned to a chorus of hoots and jeers. My chest grew tight. I fought a dizzy, overpowering need to run. As my terrified gaze swept the crowd, the sun caught a bright flash of gold. The king, in a raised viewing box, bounded by elaborate filigree railings carved of ice. He wore a gold crown set with sapphires. If it weren't for the searing cold in his dark eyes, I might have thought him beautiful. A warm, golden idol sitting among the endless shades of blue. He had an air of lazy expectance, as if ready for some diversion, but not sure it was worth his attention. I lifted my chin. I thought I caught the hint of a mocking grin in return. Mirella stood next to him, her brows drawn together, her jaw tight. As our eyes met, her brows smoothed, and she gave a slight smile. She mouthed one word. Win. At least I had one person who believed in me. A chant started in one corner of the stands and built like a gathering wave that crashed over the crowd, the whole arena throbbing with the pounding beat. Gravnach! 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 The massive champion had his back to me, as if the presence of a challenger was beneath his notice. The chant beat its way into my skull, sapping my energy. I had to do something, anything to shake off the paralyzed fear that was seizing hold of me. Raising my hands, I sent a blast of fire rolling along the ground. When it reached Gravnach's feet, he jumped and wheeled around. The crowd hissed and called out, "Kill the Fireblood!" I expected their hatred, but the intensity of it shocked me. The crowd faded out of focus as Gravnach pounded toward me in a long-legged run. I waited for him to stop, expecting we would circle each other the way the other fighters had. Instead, he kept coming, like a huge fallen tree rolling down a hill, and me no more than a patch of weeds to be crushed in his path. I fought the urge to run. When he was close enough that I saw the whites of his eyes, I threw myself to the side and swirled a blast of fire at him. He blocked it with two raised forearms and an explosion of cold that stung my face. Breathless and frustrated, I sent out a series of arrows, aiming for the openings in his defences. Most of them fell away from him with a sizzle, but a few found their mark, landing on his mask or on his skin with a hiss. He took a step back, and I had a moment of triumph. Then he bellowed and sent a wave of frost along the ground that slid under my feet. I slipped and landed on my back. The sense of vulnerability was terrifying. For a second, I was motionless, but when he threw himself toward me, I snapped into action and rolled out of the way, sliding to my feet. I sent bolts of fire behind me to gain some time, then whirled and faced him again. "Don't stop moving," I told myself. "Don't think, just move." The crowd grew louder. "Gravnach! Gravnach! Gravnach!" The chant hit me over and over like a blacksmith's hammer, pounding my nerves thin. My opponent circled me slowly. His small black eyes were full of annoyance beneath his mask. I had failed to beg for mercy or whatever it was that most opponents did within seconds of fighting him. At least, that was what I told myself. I was stronger than all the others. I would win. Faster than I would have thought possible for such a large man, he stepped forward and swept two curving walls of ice on either side of me. I extended my arms and sent out spirals of heat, stumbling backward as he advanced. He threw thin streams of ice over me, making a loose cage. My face must have shown my panic, because he smiled at me through the icy bars. "Don't think. Move." I threw out a hand and blasted a hole. As I slipped out, he threw up a wall of frost behind me and slapped me with frigid air. I stumbled backward and slammed into the wall he'd created before scrambling away. There was a pattern here. His moves were like little tests, almost playful in their delivery. He was a massive spider shooting out his sticky strands, waiting for one of them to catch his prey. I was the fly, fast and nimble, cutting through his webs and escaping. But each time I was a little slower, a little more tired. Eventually, I would be stuck fast. I pulled my arm back and shot it forward, releasing a massive tail of the dragon. Brother Thistle would have jumped up and cheered. The end snapped Gravnach below the stomach, making him double over. He stood and shot frost out wildly, but I managed to parry each attack with bolts of fire or by jumping out of the way. Some of the crowd still chanted, but most had grown quiet. The silence swelled, heavy with excitement and anticipation. Finally, their champion had an opponent worth fighting. A surge of confidence lit the fire in my chest like dry kindling on a pyre. I spun in a circle and let flames dance around me, my hair streaming behind. Gravnach was on his knees, cowering behind a protective shield of ice. I panted, hardly able to believe I'd gained the upper hand. My eyes flicked up to the king's box, where he kept the same relaxed posture, but his hands gripped the arms of his seat. This was it. I was going to win, and he knew it. If I could do this, I could do anything. I turned back to Gravnach, throwing a ring of fire around him and staring at him through the flames. I had no choice. It was kill or be killed. I gathered my heat for a final, finishing blast. With startling speed, he sent frost at the flames and my world turned to ice. My face was covered first, cutting off my breath, then my arms. Panic shot through me as I realized I'd ambled right into his web. I threw myself to the ground, shattering some of the ice. With one hand free, I poured out heat, turning my fear into fire. But more ice built up, layer upon layer that tightened and squeezed the breath from my lungs. I was losing energy, losing focus, losing the fight. No, I can't die yet.
Filthy Firebrood, Gravnach snarled. I won't let you die quickly.
He lifted a sword of ice above his head and brought it down at my arm. Desperately, I sent out a wave of heat that sheared the ice, pulling myself out of the way just before the blade cut into the earth at my side. Before I could push my advantage and free myself, I was bound again. A sense of defeat fogged my mind.
You can't win, he rumbled, his voice roughly accented and cruel. You think because you killed that frost beast that you can kill me? I am Gravnach.
He pounded his chest with his fist.
I do not succumb to frost or fire.
He threw his arms forward, and 100 pointed ice arrows shot at me. My arm came up automatically, making a shield of fire. He ice-wrapped my arms and threw more arrows at me. This time, they slashed into my face before melting like tears on my cheeks. One of them cut my eyelid, making blood pool in my eye. He laughed, and did it again and again until my face was stinging and slick with blood.
And now for your precious fingers, he crowed.
They won't make fire any more.
He raised his sword and brought it down with careful precision. I screamed as the steel cut into the flesh of my little finger. He laughed and pulled the blade out.
"Better," he said. "I'll freeze your hands and break your fingers off one by one like icicles."
Piercing cold touched my fingertips, numbing them. Fear gripped my mind, the helpless, blank terror of caught prey. The crowd was howling for my blood. I was weak, beaten, at the mercy of this monster, and still they wanted more. I hated them in that moment. If I could have, I would have burned them all. As hatred raged through me, something dark and sinuous curled and snaked into my heart, pulling my attention from the crowd and to my inner self. It was like a stranger had entered my skin. It wasn't heat. It wasn't cold. It was nothing. Blackness. A tangible absence. It grew from inside me and spread to every inch of my skin. I opened my eyes, disoriented. My vision had changed. The world was black and white and grey, bled of colour, and flat. The only thing that stood out was my opponent, his head thrown back in ecstasy at my suffering. He looked down at me.
"Do you feel it, Firebird? The pain?"
He leaned in close.
"Your pain is my pleasure."
I hardly heard him. My mind had entered an altered state. Not peaceful exactly, but devoid of care. It wasn't anything like the state of mind that Brother Thistle had taught me. Something else had oozed into that quiet space and was, if not controlling, then wiping away the thoughts and worries and questions that usually buzzed in my consciousness. Things were so much simpler here. Black and white. Me or other. Live or die. "No. Your death will be mine," I whispered, the words distant, as if they'd come from someone else. Time slowed. Somehow, I sensed his heart in his chest, pulsing with blood and life with every contraction. One beat lasted an eternity. An incredible feeling of power surged through my veins, overwhelming me.
"Burn him," said a voice, and I knew I must obey.
The voice was me, and I was the voice, and I couldn't question it. I threw out flame. It was stronger and more focused than any fire I'd ever created. It burned through his leather breastplate and into his chest. Gravnach's eyes went wide. A sound gurgled from his mouth. His body shuddered and jolted, falling face down with a resonant crash. He twitched a few times and went still. I stared at the body, so quiet and empty. A pool of dark blue blood was pooling around his face where it rested on the dusty ground. There was no sense of triumph, no remorse, only interest. This thing that had been hurting me was now still. I looked up at the silent crowd. A thought surfaced. I could do the same to all of them. Burn their hearts. Should I? My hand came out to extend the blackness to the crowd, and something inside snapped, like a thread stretched too far. In a thunderous rush, feeling and colour returned to my world, hitting me like a body blow. I gasped,
My chest seized with the shock of all my sensations returning at once. It took long seconds to realize where I was and what was happening.